Good morning and welcome to the Good Medicine is Cheaper Medicine. I'm Nash Gabriel from the Gabriel Cancer Center, and with me is Shelley Wrench. She's the administrator there. This is our program. We talk about medical economics, medical politics, and today, in this session, we want to discuss what is the president up to with healthcare. Now, make no mistake about it, he was very quiet about healthcare. And in fact, a few months after he took office, he made a comment. I'm talking about President Trump. He made a comment that he said, "I didn't know that healthcare was so complex."
Complicated.
No
yeah.
kidding.
Yeah, it is hard to keep up with. Even being in the healthcare world, it's totally complicated. It's every single day that I have to keep up with to understand, you know, how to take care of patients, how to make sure that we cross all the T's and all our I's.
And Shelley, I could tell when he made that comment, and he kept quiet. I mean, he concentrated on China, immigration.
China, yes.
And Mexico, you name it. And healthcare, and of course, crooked Hillary. But healthcare, he just kept quiet about it. And I got disappointed for the first 1 year. What's he doing? This is where we need help. Not that Obamacare is good or bad. It just doesn't solve the problem. We have a problem with healthcare, and that is we are spending more money than what we should. And, of course, everybody has their own explanations. But then I started realizing that he actually doesn't... He didn't know how complicated it was. Then he started making comments like, drug companies are charging too much money.
That's when we knew that he's doing his homework. I still realized that
he still doesn't get it. And then he came PBMs. When he talked about PBMs, I said, oh my gosh, now he's getting it.
Yeah.
Of course, there is a lot of people around him, very, very smart people. I think last night we heard from Dale Bellis again about one of the people he met who is the almost like the COO of the HHS.
Right.
The HHS Secretary, Azar, is a great guy. He was a CEO of a drug company, Eli Lilly. And then he was kidnapped to become HHS Secretary.
That was a very good decision, by the way, because you need somebody who was behind that curtain. Remember
You have to be behind that
iron curtain to know what goes on in the PBM world.
Very smart thing to do. In fact, United Health did the same thing when they hired Dr. Newcomer as their medical director. He was a practicing oncologist like myself, and they lured him into working because he knew how we think. He knew how we interact.
He knew what was really going on.
Yes, and that's why United is one of the toughest ones. So anyway, it seems that it's picking up speed. I don't think it had to do with the elections before or after elections. I just think that this president and his team, they just don't want to make decisions unless they comprehend everything. I think they also know that I was reading yesterday, just a distraction, reading a book yesterday by Newt Gingrich. The book's called Trump's America. And in the book, he talks about the complexity, how things can be complex and how difficult things can be. And sometimes for us, how sometimes we're demanding we need these things to be done very quickly, not knowing all the complexities and all the intermingling that goes on behind the scenes.
And all the politicking and all the lying. I mean, think about with our own, you know, on-site clinics that we have for employers, and the PBMs and the brokers get in front of them and tell them all these things that aren't necessarily true. So I'm sure that, you know, there's a lot of that going on to Mr. Trump and his cohorts in trying to make decisions like, who do you trust? Who do you believe? I think that's what took so long for him to start coming out, to start making decisions, because there's so many things out there that are, you know, going against each other that doesn't make sense. I think he has to, like, really understand it before he can do anything.
Let me put things in perspective so that, again, the listeners can kind of start to comprehend, understand what goes on, because even POTUS had difficulty understanding the complexity of the healthcare system. You have an insurance company. You go and buy your insurance, either as an individual or through your employer. Your insurance company, they cannot manage everything. they want the drug benefit to be managed by an entity. Drug benefit meaning the prescriptions. So they go hire this entity called PBM. Well, actually, they don't hire them directly. They hire consultants and advisors who connect them to these PBMs. PBM stands for
Pharmacy Benefit Managers.
Yes. And those pharmacy benefit managers, they have also connections to specialty pharmacies.
Right. That was the first marriage.
That was the first marriage. And what happens is the specialty pharmacy will end up buying drugs from a supplier and dispense them to or ship them to patients. What people are discovering is part of the deal, when these specialty pharmacy and PBMs, when they have a deal with the insurance company, part of the deal is sharing rebate. And people are saying, it's getting complicated, right? It really isn't.
Yeah, the insurance company, the payers are the second marriage. Now we have this little love triangle going on.
Right. So the specialty pharmacy buys drugs from drug companies at a listed price. But the drug companies promise them that they will give them a rebate at the end of the year if they have achieved a level of purchase.
Yeah, usually it's volume. Yeah.
Volume-based. Now, the
which in itself, think about that. Volume based means that you want to push it more and more. The higher the volume, the more rebates they get percentage wise. So it's not necessarily that when there's a couple of different drugs in that compete with each other. This is where we're hearing, like from insurance companies, we understand that in the IVIG, it's the immunoglobulin world, that there are four. There used to be five drug companies producing IVIG, but yet we all...
What happened to them? We don't have IVIG in the last 3 weeks.
Because this whole thing, one actually went out and there wasn't enough production. I don't know what all is happening there. I smell a lot of bad politics.
Okay. So let me go back to explain this, Shelley, to the public. The PBM, the specialty pharmacy, will get a rebate from the drug company. Rebate on the drug that they purchase on behalf of the patients. The poor patient has no clue. Now, the specialty pharmacy, when they had deals with PBMs, they promised them part of the rebate. When the PBM also a deal with the consultants, the healthcare consultants, they also promised them part of the rebate. And ultimately, the insurance companies are getting very good at taking also part of the rebate. So as a patient, you get a drug and you get the bill for $2,000. That the insurance pays. Believe it or not, that insurance company gets $200-$300 back in their pocket, not from you, from all those channels. The sad thing is, when you look at all these four levels of middlemen and women, how much are they?
I think there's way more than four, but go ahead.
There's more?
There's more than four levels. There's so many people involved. It's these are the main four, but there are more people involved.
They're collaterals. They're little, like little branches, almost like turkey foot,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so I believe when President Trump initially said drug companies are making a lot of money, then he came back a few weeks later, he said, there are some people who are making a lot of money. There, and he was talking about the PBMs. Right. And then Azar, the Secretary of HHS, he said, what is this about rebate? Show me the real price. Don't give me this whatever. Show me the real price. Because there is rebates after rebates after rebates. In fact, we deal with that too. Because we buy chemo drugs from drug companies. And, you know, I'm involved in the negotiating of those and the contracting for our national organization. And we also get some rebates. And the second saying, why is this so complicated? Just give me the right price.
Well, I think that people have to understand, too, that getting rebates doesn't mean it's a bonus necessarily. Based on where you are in your purchase price, getting that rebate will only make you whole. So having a rebate doesn't mean this is just a bonus.
Oh, I have no doubt about that.
Now, with the larger facilities in the country, when they actually have a larger volume and they get a bigger percentage rebate, then yes, then it becomes more of a bonus. But for the people on... to understand that a rebate doesn't mean that it's just an extra kickback. It's something that makes us whole on the cost of the drug.
You know what worries me the most? I think it's something we mentioned a few months ago on this show. The rebates between the manufacturer, which is drug companies, and all these entities is not a fixed formula. Drug companies compete with each other to gain the business from this PBM specialty pharmacy because they want a bigger share of the volume for their drug. What does that mean? There will be more. It's not enough for them to take the executives for a round of golf and $300 of a bottle of wine. No. They are generous with them with the rebate. Who's paying for this? If these guys, by the way, these are not physicians, they're businessmen. These people are actually now making decisions to prefer one drug over another, and they do.
As I was saying with the IVIGs. They said that they recognize that all of them are the same clinically, but we're only going to pay for this one particular manufactured drug.
Yes.
But Trump is actually wanting to peel back the layers and find out what that actual cost is.
Good luck.
Think about this, though.
Good luck,
what he wants to do is he wants, at the time of the script being written, he wants the patient and the physician to understand what the cost of that drug is. That's what he's going for. He's trying to give tools to Part C and Part D, which is Medicare Advantage, and Part D, which is the pharmacy. And they want to make sure that at the time the script is written, that the physicians and the patients know the exact cost of the drug and what the cost for the patient's out-of-pocket is, and if there are any rebates, to give it to Medicare recipients at the counter when they're checking out.
Oh, that the rebate should go to the patients.
Goes to the seniors.
I like that.
Yeah. That's one of the things in his proposed rules.
Because I am really getting more and more worried that these rebates are influencing the behavior of everyone.
Well, for sure they are. I mean, if you get a higher percentage of one drug in a category than others, what are they going to do? They're going to overutilize and choose that one drug, even though there might be something that might be a little bit clinically poor.
I got an email last night from a gentleman. He's an advocacy group in Columbus, and he listens to our radio shows. And he has written an article in the Columbus Dispatch about how insurance companies are basically telling me, the physician, no, we don't agree with you using this drug. You have to use the other one.
Oh yeah, Pathways.
And he's asking if we could have him as a guest, because he thinks that the consumers are affected by this. And I told him yes, we can do that.
Oh, for sure, because when we actually try to go out for pre-authorization for our patients at the cancer center, think about it's in black and white on the insurance portal. We'll put in the patient's name and the disease, and it pops up with all the different...
So, let me ask you a question. For the public, probably they are itching to find. Insurance companies, payers meaning, when they demand that we use one drug over another, is it always that it's a cheaper drug, or sometimes it's more expensive?
Oh, for sure. Sometimes it's more expensive. So I don't know how they make those decisions.
You just told us.
Well,
why would you prefer exclude actually other drugs for a more expensive one when they are equally effective and equally safe? What can be behind it, Shelley?
I believe it is what I think, but I'm not behind those iron curtains to know for sure, but it has to be. There has to be. It has to be associated with those rebates that they're getting and sharing of that money.
Now you know this is only a tiny, tiny slice of the healthcare problems we have the complexity of the healthcare system. Okay, should we tell us more? What does Mr. Trump want to do, the president?
The other thing that he wants to do is he wants to prohibit the prescription gag clauses from Part B. Meaning the gag clause is if the patient, as they're checking, as the patient is getting their prescription medication at the counter, their copay is actually higher than the cost of the drug. And the person behind the counter, the pharmacist or the pharmacy technician, they know that. Right now, it's a gag clause that they don't have to say, hey, you know, if you want to pay cash, it's actually cheaper.
Who is behind this gag rule?
I don't know where it came from.
So remember the old days, we still have it. There was the gag rule that was a law passed by Congress, by the way, where physicians and their offices cannot tell patients that their insurance denied them a treatment, that they can, that we cannot criticize their insurance. There was a law about that. It was a gag rule. And if you break it, the insurance, that payer, had all the right to terminate you as a provider. This is what has been going on for many years. I mean, the insurance industry, I think they were doing an okay job. But more and more we look, they are also a major part of the problem. And when I listen to policymakers talking about pre-existing conditions, I always get torn between two forces. One force says, how fair is it that I decline to buy insurance on my house until it catches fire? And they say, right. Then I say, now I want insurance and give me the $1 million that's my house worth. How fair is that?
Where would the economy go if we had to do that?
Well, that's what Obamacare required But on the other hand, how fair is it for you are enrolled in insurance and you get sick, and all of a sudden your premium goes up, or they find any reason in the world that you get kicked out of the insurance? I think policymakers have to really delineate the two. They have to tell the difference between the two. I remember in the Senate hearing when Senator Baucus from Portland, Oregon, wherever he was from, when he was explaining the ACA Obamacare, there was a Republican who said, my concern about the pre-existing is that people actually will decline to buy insurance, like I brought the example of insurance on my house, and then they will only go and require buy insurance when they're sick. It makes sense. And Baca said, you are really thinking badly about the American people. You think they are twisted people. What an idiot. Well, he's a traditional idiot, but this is a human nature. I mean, wouldn't you actually do that if now there is a mandate that you don't have to buy car insurance, but the minute you have an accident, you can go and demand that the insurance carrier will get you the insurance and you pay your premium of $100 then, and the cost of fixing the car would be $6,000. Wouldn't that be awesome? Who will say no to that?
Exactly.
Except if you are Mother Teresa, you might say no.
Yeah. The other thing that they want to do, Donald Trump wants to do, is for Part C and D, Medicare Advantage, and Part D, they already have some steps therapy that's in there, but they want to give them more control over the steps therapy and making sure that the biosimilars are totally included. Now that all the biosimilars are starting to come out, which, what happened with that? How many biosimilars have been approved now? Probably, I'd have to look, 16 or 17, and then, yet there's only like 4 or 5 on the market.
So for the audience, biosimilars are kind of the generic forms of drugs that are made or manufactured in biological media. These are not the penicillins of the world where you make them in a lab, test a tube, bang, and you have penicillin. These are the drugs that you need to genetically modify a bacteria or a fungus or a hamster egg and then make them make the antibody. A very complex process.
So they're biologic agents. So it's like biologic agents that go generic is called biosimilars.
Because their making is very complex. Because the quality control on making them is very complex. And because the demand that scientific is required, that you do specific testing, that they don't come into the market as quickly and as cheaply as generic drugs do.
Well, that's one thing. But what I'm saying is after approval of the biosimilar, there's like a big gap in time that they're actually coming out on the market. That's where that, you know, pay to delay comes in.
I'm getting disappointed by some judges who, like, let's say Amgen have a drug called Neulasta, $3,000-$4,000 a pop, right? And there is this company making a biosimilar, and Amgen will go and file. Oh, they think it's crystal clear when their patent expires. And those people say, we want to come to the market. And Amgen will go and simply file to the FDA, to the court. Oh, they are infringing because they find some technical reason. All of a sudden, the judge will say, oh, put on hold on marketing this drug until we reach a conclusion. That's all they want, is delay so that they cash one extra money, one extra year of revenue from this.
Absolutely.
I think Azar or the FDA or somebody made a comment recently that they want to make that process a little bit more kind of seamless, because they are all concerned. There is now, so what the biosimilar people do, they go back to Amgen, let's negotiate. Amgen say, okay, how about you give us another 1 year and then you market after that? How fair is that to the public? Actually, that process by itself contributes to the fact that the biosimilars are not as inexpensive as you and I hoped.
Right, they're coming out not that much lower than their reference product.
The average saving
product
is what, 6-10%?
Yeah.
It's not crumbs. It's still money, because when you look at a drug that's the annual cost is $250,000. If you save a 10%. That's not bad, right? $25,000. But you and I were hoping that it will be more like 30% savings. And I don't know. I do know Dr. Gottlieb, who is the head of the FDA. He's very in line with accelerating the process of developing and approving these drugs. And of course, bureaucracy got to help them. Bureaucracy is the biggest problem with that one, because you know, I have been watching this process developing biosimilars for the last 7-8 years. And I tell you what, the bureaucrats at the FDA and other agencies, they're horrible. They really create every single obstacle in our way. Fortunately, we have administration now that is saying enough is enough. We need these drugs to come to the market. Today, still today, it takes average 11 years and $2.1 billion to develop one drug. It shouldn't take this long.
No, and that's why the biosimilars, they don't have to go through all that rigorous process as the reference products or their main product, the biologics, went through. That's why it should be a lot cheaper. But as you say, you know, these companies are being feisty and not allowing them to come out. They're having to eat some of that revenue that they should have been expecting by this pay for delay type situation with the reference company.
But Chen, who's to blame for that? I always blame the government. Anything that goes wrong in the world, you had to blame the government for, not the people. Why would they allow the judges to have so much power to put a stay? Oh, you cannot market your drug until I say so.
Well, I think that's why
there's too much power in these hands.
I agree, and I think that's why. Mr. Trump is putting this right into the proposed rule of mentioning biosimilar specifically. I think he's caught wind of this, and I think he's going to make this happen.
So the hope is, I think they are in the right direction. I don't think the politicians in the Congress will even have to bother about whether we need Obamacare or not. If we implement policies like this, and if we manage to lower healthcare costs by 7-8%, who cares about there is Obamacare or not? Because if we save 7-8%, that money is a plenty to take care of everybody uninsured. And that money that they're going to save, it's not going to be saved from compromising the research and development by drug companies. It will only compromise the research and development by the marketing people and by the salesmen and women and by the PBMs. And those are the people who actually do not discover drugs.
Right.
Those people, as President Trump said more than once, they're making a lot of money, and that's going to stop. That's what he said. And you know what? I don't think he's jealous of people making money, because he made a lot of money. I think he was saying that.
I think he wants
undeservingly.
I think he wants the seniors to make back the money rather than somebody else getting fatter. These poor seniors need to get that money back. If somebody else is cashing on their behalf,
that would be the right thing to do.
Yeah. So what can patients do when say that they come to you, and you diagnose them and you want to treat them with something? What can patients do with their own physicians to say, help me make a wiser decision? Is there alternatives that are, you know, lower cost alternatives for the medication? Is there a biosimilar for this product? Are there generics? What can patients do to make sure that they aren't paying higher?
That's a great question, Shelley. The patients are in the dark. The poor patients, they come, they are flabbergasted, they are scared, they've been told, in our case, serious, serious illness. Probably money doesn't go into their mind. But your question is, what can we do so that at least next visit, they say, okay, how much that's going to cost me? Now, again, one of the proposals by the government is that everybody should list their prices on their website or somewhere. I think that'd be fair. You and I discovered that for the drug Optivo, the cost is $9,000 every 3 weeks. Correct?
Right.
Mm-hmm. We will not name names, but there are institutions in Northeast Ohio. We get paid $9,000. They charge $67,000.
We've seen those bills.
Do the public know this?
No.
They don't know so much, or they know so little, that when they hear us saying this, they say, oh, that's hot air. It cannot be.
So what can
Trust
they do?
Trust me, it is.
So what can they do?
You have to be your own self-advocate. You have to really be the one who look after for yourself. You also have to... You have to realize that not everybody is just there to help you as you think. No. You really have to be your own...
advocate.
Yep.
And there's a good website called goodrx.com, which it gives you kind of a rule of thumb of kind of a base point of what each drug is that's out there in the market.
Yeah. So when you see the big hospitals institutions with their huge expansion, all those glass windows, they look like the Taj Mahals. You have to realize, where does that money come from? I'm not saying people should not make money, but I have a problem with price gouging against patients. That I really have a problem with. And that's what's happening now. And I'm hoping that the transparency in the pricing will solve the problem.
I think that President Trump is going to do that for us, and I think he's going to finally get it.
Well, Shelley, we have to do it for ourselves. Ultimately, it's our country also. Thank you.